Hi, I'm Dr. Alyssa Abdullah, better known as Dr. J, Senior Vice President and Deputy Chief Security Officer for MasterCard, CISO Ambassador for Cybersecurity Ventures, and your host for today's CISO 500 episode. I'm here today with Ariel Weintraub, the Chief Information Security Officer for MassMutual. Welcome, Ariel. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a good feeling when I talk to new CISOs, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but when I bring my CISO friends on, because I like to start out asking how you got to where you are. I think this audience loves to hear the different paths that we take, and I know that you were in a previous security role, but I'd love to hear your path to becoming a CISO.
Yeah, absolutely. So the majority of my career has been within cybersecurity, but I didn't necessarily always know that was the goal that I wanted to achieve. But before I even started in cybersecurity, I actually started in studying business when I was in undergraduate school. And that was because I was trying to do anything other than what my parents did. So I come from a very technical background. And so, you know, as any good teenager, I wanted to do something different than my parents. So I decided to major in business. And I tried even to do marketing, but turns out I'm horrible at marketing. I'm not very creative on that side. I'm much more of a math and science person. So I quickly found my way back into IT and just out of college, started in a technology consulting type role. But then very quickly after that, moved into the cybersecurity space doing consulting at a big four company. So from there, you know, I wouldn't say right away I knew that I wanted to be a CISO eventually, but I knew that I wanted to take on a big role within that field, and was really fortunate that early on met some amazing female leaders within the cybersecurity risk and privacy space that opened up those doors for me, those opportunities, and made me even consider that the CISO role could be a career aspiration for me. So I would say, you know, within the first couple of years of then working in the field, I knew that then at that point, that was kind of what I wanted to strive for. So it was important for me to move around a lot. And as a human being, I like challenges. I can get bored easily. So I like to take on new programs, new functions, you know, I love building. I don't necessarily like just running things that have been functioning for a while. So it gave me an opportunity both within companies and also to leave companies to go do new things, to try a lot of new things. So I did roles in risk, cyber risk. I did roles in security operations. I got a lot of exposure to all of the functions that a traditional CISO would have responsibility for, which I think really set me up for success most recently when I had the opportunity to take on this role from within, which was great because I had already been at the company about a year and a half before the opportunity to step into the role kind of presented itself. And wow. I don't think I thought that it would happen this early on, but I was really fortunate that I was kind of in the right place at the right time, had the right experience, have had so many amazing mentors, male and female, that have really given me a lot of good advice over time.
So I think, you know, I'm always inspired by people who know what they want to do and then say, you know, like I knew I wanted to be a CISO and I'm going to go out and get that. I'll tell you this. I started out as a mass communications major. I was going to be a radio DJ, which is the funniest thing ever. But I think where we find some commonalities is I was willing to try any and everything until I found my love and my passion, and my love and my passion ended up being cybersecurity. And so with that, you just talked about the importance of trying a lot of different things and you know, increasing your breadth in technology and cybersecurity. And I'm wondering, you know, a lot of times we talk about the fact that you can be an artist and be in cybersecurity. You can be, you know, doesn't have to be a scientific type of field because there's so much opportunity. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with each of those different opportunities and how you feel about the different thought processes, or not really how you feel, but you know, your thought on different backgrounds being introduced into cybersecurity?
Yeah, 100%. I actually talk about this quite a lot because I think some people, especially people in going through undergraduate school now, think that they have to choose a major that aligns directly with their, you know, aspiration of what they want to do in a career. And in cybersecurity in particular, I think that being having a diverse set of backgrounds, educational backgrounds, obviously other types of backgrounds as well, is really helpful to be successful in preventing and responding to cybersecurity attacks, because we have to think creatively in order to keep up with the different types of attacks, the techniques. Absolutely. And, you know, the threat actors that we're up against come from a wide variety of backgrounds. Some may be formally trained, others aren't, right? They're going to have different types of skill sets. So we have to have a team of people that are thinking creatively and come from different backgrounds. So, you know, the business background that I originally had is helpful for things like communication and presentation. Yes. And structuring, you know, strategy and ideas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a colleague of mine, maybe that comes from political science, is going to have an understanding of the political landscape and how that influences our threat actors and our relations with different countries. And, you know, for example, this year, how we're seeing more activity originating from Russia, you know, what's the political origins of that.
Right.
So there's all these different, you know, backgrounds that I think are really helpful educationally to make us very well-rounded as a team to be able to defend against some of the most sophisticated actors that are out there.
Now, you do a lot of work, or I think I've heard you talk somewhere about data science. Can you share with our listeners how you're applying data science to cybersecurity?
Well, you know, similar to my last comments, we're up against very sophisticated threat actors that some of our traditional techniques are no longer sufficient to be able to defend ourselves against them. You know, that we can't hire an army of security analysts to monitor all of the events logs that are generated on a daily basis. You know, that would just, it's cost prohibitive, right? To be able to proactively defend ourselves. So data science can be really helpful in focusing our human time on the things that actually require human analysis, but mm-hmm. then leveraging the technology to do some of the more standard and repeatable functions. So two areas in particular that I think are the most practical for use of data science are within the Security Operations Center and Identity and Access Management.
Absolutely.
So on the Security Operations Center side, you can't fully automate all of the security monitoring because context is really important for understanding the intent behind, you know, a threat actor's motivations, but you can certainly automate some of the low-hanging fruit, aggregate data together to present it to a human analyst to be able to evaluate and then make a decision. And so ultimately then that does reduce the total number of people that you need, but it doesn't replace, you know, the humans altogether. And similarly, in identity and access management, there are so many, you know, identities and service accounts and human accounts and, you know, all these things that generate activity on a daily basis that it can be like looking for a needle in a haystack to find something that's compromised within the environment. But if you're using data science to baseline what's normal for any given identity, you can more easily identify when something has gone anomalous. So even looking at, you know, the SolarWinds compromise example, if you use data science to baseline, if you had used it to baseline the, you know, the privileged account that the SolarWinds software had in an environment, to understand what's normal for that given identity. And then you see that identity doing something that it shouldn't do because of the understanding of the previous baseline. And you have the ability using automation to immediately suspend that account's access. Well, now you've just shut down, you know, that potential backdoor in the environment.
So data science is giving us richer opportunities to correlate large sets of data. Where we have been, we as humans can be slow with that because of the amount of data that we have to process, like huge, huge amounts of data. And so all of the things that we're learning from applying data science and data science methodologies to our data help us to easily see areas where there's opportunity and we need, you know, more resilience. When I think about areas of opportunity, I'd like for you to just take a few minutes to talk about the top challenges you're seeing across the industry right now. And I'm talking about cybersecurity industry, not necessarily insurance or mass, you know, what Mass Mutual has going on. So the top challenges you are seeing across industry.
Supply chain attacks.
And, oh, absolutely.
You know, and that relates to that last comment about the power of data science in identity and access management from the SolarWinds example, because it's almost impossible to prevent an indirect impact from a supply chain attack. Mm-hmm. There's too many external factors. You can only control so much within your own walls. So how do you very quickly detect and then pivot in the event of an attack from an upstream supplier? Mm-hmm. And, you know, historically, I think prior to SolarWinds, a lot of, or even most of these types of attacks were more disruptive in nature. For example, a couple of years back when there was a wave of ransomware events that impacted things like shipping distribution, you know, that gives you a different type of business continuity planning where you have to be able to quickly pivot to a different supplier to provide your business with a particular function. But now we're seeing with SolarWinds, as an example, you know, we're seeing how does an impacted supplier upstream actually impact your company in your own four walls, where right. you may have assumed, you know, previously that you could trust the software updates being provided by your suppliers. But mm-hmm. obviously in this case, you know, that wasn't the case. So I think understanding the role of suppliers in our business operations, and not just only in our business operations, but in our technology environment, and then reevaluating our third-party risk programs to figure out how do we more easily find those gaps in our environment or those areas that are kind of ripe for potential compromise. Because, you know, SolarWinds as an example, a lot of third-party risk programs wouldn't have had SolarWinds on their radar because mm-hmm. the company didn't have, you know, direct access to any data. That's usually a common criteria, right? You know, are they accessing your sensitive data? No, in this case, right? Do they have direct access to your network? Probably not. But the actual configurations of the software ultimately is what led to the compromise. So I think it's causing the industry to reevaluate the role of a third-party risk program mm-hmm. As part of a broader supply chain attack.
I'd love to wrap us up by talking about what's to come. Like, what are we missing? Give you the final word on what's to come. What's to come from Ariel in her new role as the CISO of MassMutual. Congratulations to you on that. And then what's to come on in the industry as well?
I think more partnership across organizations and even across sectors.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're fortunate to work in financial services where we have access to one of the greatest information sharing organizations that really mm-hmm. gives us the step up in terms of being more proactive. We can communicate, you know, confidentially amongst our peer organizations to understand what the threat actors are doing, what the techniques are, and then use those to inform our own programs. But I think there's more we could be doing across both private and public sectors, because the threat actors that we're up against aren't necessarily working in silos like we are. And so the more sharing we do of intel between private and public sectors, and even across private sectors, I think we'll be much more, we'll be stronger in defense against them. So maybe data science, again, can help us there, because if we can do more anonymization of our indicators of compromise, the techniques, yes. et cetera, and share that more across the industries. You know, I think a lot of people have been trying to do that, but if mm-hmm. we focus more on that, we'll be able to better defend ourselves as a nation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has been such a great time talking to you, Ariel. It's so refreshing. You know, I rarely get to really dig deep into data science, and you have definitely brought some ideas to mind for me and for our listeners. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Dr. J, your host for today's CISO 500 episode, joined by Ariel Weintraub, Chief Information Security Officer at MassMutual. To learn more about MassMutual, go to www.massmutual.com. You can listen to all of our podcasts on cybercrime.radio.